Welcome to Green and Gold Forever. I'm Eric Drews, broadcasting from Appleton, Wisconsin, and we'll be joined shortly here by Matt McLean out in Altoona. And what a treat. It's Sunday afternoon, and we're going to have a new episode of Green and Gold Forever because the Green Bay Packers were able to play their Week 7 game on Thursday, probably much to their chagrin, as a battered and tattered Green Bay Packer team was able to beat a Bears team that was in similar shape by a final score of 26-10. And let's talk about the most obvious thing from Thursday. What did you think of those unis?
Yeah, not what I thought you were going to say there. I really liked them. I mean, I think the yellow pants away uniforms are still some of the coolest uniforms in football, but it, you know, if you're able to pull those out every now and then, I think it would be kind of a cool addition to our wardrobe.
Mm-hmm. I was against the color rush for a long time, but now I think I would almost advocate that they replace the uniforms they wore against Dallas last week with the ones they wore on Thursday, because I think those throwback ones are not all that interesting, and I mean, we just don't have very good throwbacks because our regular uniforms have been around since 1961, so I kind of like this idea of having the all-whites. I thought it looked pretty classy.
Yeah, on that note, my biggest gripe with our throwbacks is all you have to do is just throw some gray face masks on those things and then mm-hmm. you're good to go, right? You can change the face mask color?
I think you can, yeah. You just can't swap out the helmet.
So you can just throw some gray face masks on there and make them look like the 60s Packers. They'd be way better than those navy and tan or whatever jerseys. Those are pretty bad.
I want them to pay tribute to the Forrest Gregg era with the weird stripe that they had on the pants that had their number in a circle, and then on their sleeve where they have the stripes, they had a G on it. So they should do that and pay tribute to those teams that lost all the time and cheap-shotted the Bears every time they played.
Yeah, so there's so many options. They're all so similar. But, I mean, you could even do, like, the Lynn Dickey Packers or, like, the Mikowski Packers. Packers and just throw the G down a few inches on the helmet and you're good to go.
And make some guys have it all crooked and yeah. They looked like a high school team. Yeah, they should do that for sure. All right, well, the Packers were able to win, and they had to use a very peculiar offense because Eddie Lacy, I can't remember now if it was Wednesday or earlier in the day on Thursday, was placed on injured reserve, and I haven't had an opportunity to read too much more about it. I've heard that he's got some ligament damage, potentially. He's had surgery already, but with the move to put him on injured reserve, that means that either Sam Shields or Eddie Lacy is done for the year. You can't take more than one person off of that injured reserve, and so there's going to be at least one of those guys gone. They traded for Nile Davis from the Kansas City Chiefs, who had almost no impact on a Thursday night game, was only in town for like a day or two. And then Don Jackson that they got off the practice squad? He got hurt almost instantly, so they had to play with Ty Montgomery and Randall Cobb mostly in the backfield and throw about 150 times, and it's maybe as effective as they've been in several weeks, but it sure was interesting. I guess that's the best I can say about it.
Yeah, at least you can say they were creative, and I think with at least the kind of passing they did, it's kind of like what you've been asking them to do and what you know we've been calling for the last couple of years, and just running a lot more short routes and just kind of using that as a substitute to the run game almost, and more of an old-school West Coast with kind of a new spread flair to it a little bit. And it was effective. I mean, you get the ball in your guys' hands, and you've got some receivers that don't have top-end speed, so they haven't been getting open deep for the last year and a half. But what they do have is they're shifty and they're quick, and they're decent route runners on these short routes, so you kind of exploited a bad defense with that, and it worked.
Yeah, I mean, you almost had to do that. But yeah, I think all of your points are well taken, and they threw 56 times. Aaron Rodgers was 39 of 56 for 326 yards. So 326 yards on 56 attempts is only 5.8 yards per attempt, which usually is pretty miserable, but that's kind of how they had to play when you didn't really have a deep threat or a running game to try to pull people to the line of scrimmage. And They had 32 first downs to the Bears' 13. They tied their season output of yards in a game of offense at 406. They had the ball for almost 40 minutes. So, and even running the ball, they were 23 attempts for 103 yards. Not perfect, but certainly, you know, over four an attempt using wide receivers at running back. So I think kudos to the coaching staff and the players for being able to basically change their offense in 3 days based on necessity. But I tell you what, when they're not playing the Bears, I'd be curious to see how well it works.
Right. When you're not facing, you know, a secondary that's already bad, but then you're facing their whatever fourth and fifth corners or whatever it is, you're going to be able to get open on those routes a little bit. So I think it was fun to see. It was a different offense, and you actually got to see our guys do some things. I mean, Devontae Adams and Aaron Rodgers had their best games in a long time, and it was nice to see some production. But like you said, I don't want to take too much away from it because you probably can't sustain this that much, but it was fun to watch.
Yeah, they had three 13-plus play drives, and I think a couple of their other scoring drives were 10. Hard-pressed to believe they can do that against Minnesota or Seattle or a team like that. To have four drives of that many plays. But, you know, you took advantage of a Bears team who wasn't doing too well, and I think I read that they had seven starters missing from that game. So, yeah. I wanted to talk about this a little later on, but they got to get rid of these Thursday night games. I think it's contributing to how the ratings are going down, and that game wasn't very entertaining to watch. Then they stick one on this morning at 8:30. So way to build your market in LA. You steal one of their home games, and then it kicks off at 6 a.m. in Los Angeles to watch their brand new team. And then that game was abysmal. Gosh, I think this Thursday night is the perfect example of them not only putting their product on too much and making it too accessible to the point where the games don't feel that special anymore because there's one on every day, it seems like, but also the games themselves are putting so much strain on the coaching staffs and players to actually come up with a game plan that once they take the field, they're garbage and they're very hard to watch.
Yeah, I mean, the majority, you look at these noon games and they're generally the best played games, but you can only watch one of those, whereas if you're going to watch football on Thursday, it's almost always been terrible. So, like, the people who tune in and watch that are watching bad football. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, people who've been watching it for a long time like us know that that's not the actual game and the actual product. But I think a lot of people can tune in and watch that and not get that excited for the rest of the games. Mm-hmm. And like you said, there's just not that build-up. You wait all week for some games on Sunday, and now you've got, like, kind of a downer on Thursdays.
Yeah.
That kind of makes you less excited, and everybody says they're never going to get rid of it because of the money, but you kind of wonder if they start to realize that in kind of a backward sort of way is taking out more out of their pockets in a different sort of way because it's taking less viewers away from, you know, potentially Sunday and Monday.
Well, it's completely oversaturating their product. Right now, it's basically, I know they don't play Friday and Saturday, at least for most of the season, but there's football on those days. And so if you're a fan of football and you're watching, like if you're going to a high school game or you're watching college football that plays on those nights, Tuesday and Wednesday are the only nights of the week that you can't watch football. And I know this is not the NFL's fault, but ESPN, once you hit November, they have college football games on Tuesday and Wednesday also. So yeah. There's a game every single day, and so if it's a crummy product, I like football as much as anything I've ever encountered in my life from an entertainment standpoint, and I get tired of watching it. And it's funny that they keep replaying that Aaron Rodgers Hail Mary on all of the ads because they've been playing Thursday Night Football for 10 years, and it's literally the only thing I can remember ever happening in one of those decades worth of games.
Right. Yeah, and you get so worn out, and that I never thought, you know, growing up or whatever, I would let a game slip by me and not want to watch it, but I generally have been only partially watching the Sunday night games and only partially watching the Monday night games sometimes, depending on what the games are. Mm-hmm. Whereas I would have never missed those in the past. But by the time you get through all of it, you're just so worn out from it. You just don't want to watch anymore. You got to do some other things in your weekend.
Yeah, you have to like readjust your brain for Monday morning to realize that life's not about getting first downs and things like that. But yeah, and we've talked about our own viewing habits and how they've evolved. And one of the things that we've talked about as well, we're in our late 20s now, and we have other responsibilities and full-time jobs and a whole bunch of other things going on, but their ratings are plummeting. They can't all be 29-year-olds that are suddenly finding the rest of their life. So it's really interesting, and I wonder, I like you said, I doubt it's going to change anytime soon, but even today, I'm starting to lose patience with seeing some of these games, and you hear Aikman. It feels like every game Troy Aikman's commentating, he's just criticizing for how bad the game is that he's watching. Today, he was just going nuts on the referees and
the Vikings.
Yeah, the Vikings were really bad, and it was the case of, and this was what I wanted to talk about at the end of this point, because I think this adjustment the Packers made was very impressive, and I give them a lot of credit for it, but that's the offense I absolutely hate watching that they ran on Thursday, and I almost am hoping it does not become a permanent part of their offense. And granted, I want them to be successful, but I don't like watching 56 passes for 6 yards a pass attempt. That's like the thing I hate the most about modern NFL. And I think with some of what they've done recently, with all of the rules changes and the emphasis of rules trying to open up the game using the penalty flag as their tool, you see it in a lot of these games now that it's not opening up offenses. What it's doing is it's creating offenses like San Diego and Miami that are having 4,500-yard passing seasons and barely scoring 20 points a game. It's just a more frustrating version. They're not scoring anymore, and now they're just, I guess, more punts and fewer third-down conversions. It's like you still have the same point production, but you took away the bomb. Like, that's no fun.
Yeah, I get your point. I guess this Packers offense has been so frustrating anyways. I guess I enjoyed watching that a little more. I agree on overall, I don't like that the game has kind of turned into that, but you kind of needed a way to move the ball, and this team really does need that. I just don't know if we have the receiving core, or at this point the quarterback, to run a conventional offense, and that's why I think we see a lot of, like, especially lower-level college teams run things like this, is because it's a talent neutralizer.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't get it done the regular way, you've got no running backs, you're kind of forced to run this, and then we see it work, I guess. I mean, not always. Like you said, it kind of produces false stats a lot of times.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not like we've been a juggernaut before this.
No, and I'm not going to bemoan the coaching staff for, you know, I'm not expecting Mike McCarthy to come in and be like, well, guys, that worked great, but it was just too boring for me, so we got to start throwing down the field again. But it's just kind of like, I obviously want the Packers to win, but to try to use an example, think of the old, this will work for you, Matt, maybe not for all of our listeners, but think of the old New Jersey Devils trap that just made the NHL so boring, and like a one goal felt like it was all it took to win a game. It was so defense-oriented, and if your team's running it and winning the Stanley Cup, you know, twice in 5 years, it's awesome, but it doesn't make it particularly interesting to watch. And yeah, if the Packers do it and they're successful, I'll be fine with it, but the problem is every other team in the league's doing it, and it's making me not want to watch their games.
Right. Yep, I get it.
Okay, so let's move on and talk about some of the positive things of that strange output. So Ty Montgomery had 10 catches for 66 yards, which kind of illustrates that point. Randall Cobb had his best game in a long time, 11 catches, 95 yards, and a touchdown. And then Davante Adams had probably his, undoubtedly his best game as a pro, 13 catches for 132 yards and two touchdowns. He was one away from Don Hutson's single-game reception record for the Packers, which happened in 1944, I think, which is still another illustration of how ridiculous Don Hutson was from a stat standpoint. An NFL Network made up a stat that was hilarious and how forced it was to try to give somebody a record. They said that Davante Adams was the first guy in the history of Lambeau Field to have 10 catches, 100 yards, and two touchdowns in one game. And even that I had a hard time believing, you know, when Sterling Sharp was on the team, when he caught about 75% of Brett Favre's touchdowns his first 3 years. But Sharp, I actually looked it up. If you take the Lambeau Field element out of it, Jordy Nelson did it against the Bears in 2014. Javon Walker did it against the Colts in that shootout game in 04. Freeman did it in 97 against the Panthers. And Sterling Sharp did it 1993 at Tampa, and then he did it at home against the Vikings in 1989, but it was in Milwaukee. So I guess congratulations on your record, Devontae.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever. But it was weird to, because I think, like, watching that game too, I mean, you said Cobb had his best game in a while, but yeah, I mean, he still, like, kind of missed a couple of touchdown opportunities and just looked sort of middle of the road, I guess. But Devontae looked really good. Like, he looked athletic and he was snagging the ball out of the air,
yeah,
running crisp routes. It was like, it was almost like a completely different person than we've seen. And we saw a little bit of it a couple weeks ago, but I mean, he looked like a completely different guy and he didn't look unsure of himself. I guess maybe this is the kind of offense he was probably used to running in college and feels more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, but it was fun to watch, and it makes you kind of think twice about everything you'd said before, even though we had proof what we were saying was correct.
Well, I'll wait till he's not taking on a depleted version of an already horrible secondary. But some of those catches, like you said, were incredibly athletic. That first touchdown that he caught behind the DB's back was not a lot of guys can make that. I don't know if there's any other guy on the team, maybe Jordy Nelson, that can make that catch. How long do you think Montgomery and or Cobb can hold up getting, you know, Montgomery had 9 carries as a running back and Cobb only had 5, but how long do you think those guys can hold up touching the ball 20 times a game?
Well, you sure hope the rest of the season, but I mean, they're getting pounded more than anybody. They're like the smallest guys out there, and they're somehow the only ones that are staying healthy right now.
Yeah,
which has been kind of strange, but you need them. I mean, your whole offense has been those two guys basically right now.
Yeah, maybe they will. The Nile Davis thing probably was an anomaly just because he had been on the team so short, but I would imagine that they're going to try to make him their feature back going forward, although I have no idea when or if James Starks is coming back. I kind of forgot about him.
Yeah, that when you had said the thing about the IR before with Shields and Lacey, in the back of my mind, I had thought Starks was on that IR too, but I think maybe he has not gone on that.
Yeah, I don't think he has. Let's look. James Starks, yeah, he had a surgery to repair a meniscus, so it sounds like what Ben Roethlisberger did. 4 weeks. I can't remember the last game he played. So did he? Actually, he played against Dallas, didn't he?
Yeah.
So he'll be out a while yet. But he's not on IR, though. And Corey Linsley might be eligible to come back, so that's cool, looking at the injury list.
Yeah. Yeah, the line's still looking well. The Nile Davis trade was interesting, just because it's something they haven't done, like, ever. They never trade for players. And just with this front office, you would think they'd go out and get, like, an undrafted free agent or just somebody sitting on the waiver wire. Instead, they go and get a guy who has never, even in the time when, like, Jamal Charles has been hurt and things, hasn't really garnished many carries in Kansas City and has never really kind of been that workhorse back that it seems like they're trying to replace.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Sorry, I was a little distracted there. I just had somebody's trying to leaf blow our gutters, our neighbor is. So it's very nice, but I heard the doorbell, and I think it's being taken care of. So, all right, so yeah, hopefully Nile Davis can become a bigger part of the offense, and I guess I thought he had been a bigger part of Kansas City's offense looking back on his statistics, but it looks like he was not even a James Starks level bit player on their team. He did have that big kick return at the first game of the playoffs last year, but I guess I thought for some reason that he was a bigger part of the team, but I must have been thinking of somebody else.
Yeah, I forget the guy they had last year that replaced Charles when he went down, but it wasn't Davis. I think he's kind of been more just a kick returner and then kind of the passing situation, third down back sort of a guy.
Mm-hmm.
So he hasn't really been much ever for, you know, I'd have to look at his stats, but I don't think he's been much ever for, like, a consistent carry back.
And I guess I should have thought that, considering they wouldn't have parted with him so for such a small price if he was more important to him. Spencer Ware was probably the guy I was confusing him with.
Yeah, Sharkhandrick West, his name just popped in my head, too. He was the guy who they played mostly last year.
Yeah, he was kind of their feature guy. I don't know who they have going on this year. I feel like I haven't seen Kansas City play at all this year other than 2 seconds when they were getting slaughtered by Pittsburgh.
Right.
Okay, so that game's fading fast from our memory. Other than the uniforms, I can't imagine too much being remembered from that. The defense was dominant. but they were playing against a horrible team, and a horrible team that already was missing their starting quarterback. They lost their second-string quarterback, Brian Hoyer, early on in the game, who he actually had been playing pretty well coming into that game, and he got his arm busted by Clay Matthews, and I guess I wanted to ask if you thought that was a clean hit or not.
I mean, it was maybe a little aggressive. I don't think he obviously didn't expect to break somebody's arm, but it's just usual Clay play where you kind of like, if you're on the other team watching him, you probably hate this guy at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does a lot of that stuff and doesn't seem to get much notoriety for it.
No, it's always just, I don't quite know how to describe it, because it's not Sue, where Sue looks malicious, whereas Clay is just kind of roughhousing, for lack of a better word, where he always wants to put a little... Who was that guy who said he put a little hot sauce on Reggie Bush's ankle?
Bart Scott.
I think it was Bart Scott. So Clay Matthews is also a hot sauce enthusiast, I think, and likes to do that stuff. But I guess I agree. But yeah, it looked really bad the way he basically lowered his helmet right into his arm, and I felt bad for poor Hoyer. So yeah, we'll see how that defense holds up when they're not playing Matt Barkley with no time to prepare for them. It was nice, though, to see Nick Perry and also Blake Martinez got interceptions. I think first career for each of those guys.
Yeah, that was good. More good games from them and Jake Ryan, and you saw Julius Peppers make a play, too, which was nice.
Mm-hmm.
I think you really did get bailed out by a couple of really bad quarterbacks. We got lucky to see the bad Brian Hoyer,
yeah,
where he had been playing pretty well, and then he got injured and Barkley had no chance. So, I mean, you weren't going to lose that game. So I think the front seven still looked good, but it wasn't much of a challenge.
Yeah, and that challenge is certainly going to be elevated coming up a week from today when they have to take on the Atlanta Falcons, who are playing as we speak. So I'm away from Red Zone or whatever. Do you have any idea how that game's going?
I believe they're winning. I know Matt Ryan just threw a touchdown pass, and they're wearing those awesome throwbacks too. So
yeah, that actually worked out. Apparently they wanted to wear the red helmets, but this was an adjustment because they're not allowed to, and it turned into like a hybrid of their 90s jerseys and their 60s jerseys. These are way better than their normal uniforms.
I do like these ones. I miss them, and you know, nostalgic, because these are the jerseys basically that we grew up watching, were the black Falcons jerseys, and I always liked them a lot.
Yeah, it made me want to do the Dirty Bird watching them. Maybe I'll do that when we're done. So let's not talk too much about the games that are going on now, because by the time this is posted, it'll probably be like an hour later or whatever. But barring any crazy injuries, this is going to be a ridiculously hard challenge for that secondary. Quentin Rollins and Demarius Randle are still listed as questionable for this coming game against Atlanta. The Falcons have slowed down considerably from their early pace, but they still have maybe the best offensive weapon in the NFL right now in Julio Jones. And when we were talking last week, you said that you were guaranteeing, for lack of a better word, that Julio Jones was going to break the NFL single-game yardage receiving record against the Packers. Do you stand by that?
I guess with the odds being in the other's favor, I'll say probably not. But I mean, right now as it lines up, he's going to have a monster game. And if you line up, you know, a couple guys on him, I bet Sanu has just an absolute monster of a game.
Yeah,
it's not looking good.
Or Devontae Freeman runs for 230 yards or something like that.
We're not to the picks yet, but I'm having a hard time. And you know, unless we can somehow muster up a shootout from this offense and just try to keep pace, I'm not sure how this defense is going to slow down this passing attack.
Yeah, I think that the Packers are in deep trouble next Sunday, and it sucks because Minnesota lost today and looked very vulnerable, and you had said earlier in the season that you weren't too... I mean, the Vikings are still going to be a threat the whole time, but I had wondered if they were maybe a Super Bowl contender, and you seemed to have less enthusiasm for that because of how bad their offensive line was, and that was very apparent today as they got roughed up really badly by the Philadelphia Eagles, who aren't exactly, you know, the Lawrence Taylor Giants or anything like that. But I still think, seeing a lot of the teams and the way the Packers played, this still feels like a team that's going to get between 8 and 10 wins. And that schedule that looked like it was going to be really easy all of a sudden looks really hard. And they're playing at the Falcons, then home to the Colts, at Tennessee, at Washington, at Philadelphia. Would you be surprised if they lost 3, even 4 of those games?
Oh, not at all. And it is funny, and we shouldn't be surprised because this happens every year. But you looked at this stretch, and you're like, oh, man, this should be easy enough. I mean, you've got the Falcons, who are always average. You know, the Redskins, we can't take them seriously. The Eagles, we thought were going to be horrible. Mm-hmm. And now even the Titans. I mean, all these teams have a little bit of punching power. So, yeah, I'm going to be – I think this is a big test this week to see if they can hang with an actually a good team.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not going to be surprised at all if, you know, you go 500 over this stretch.
Yeah, and I'm thinking it could be even worse. And then looking after that, you come back home to host the Texans, then you host Seattle, then you go to Chicago, then you host Minnesota on Christmas Eve, and then you go to Detroit. And, gosh, there's the only game in that stretch that I'm really sure they'll win is at the Bears. The rest of those are 50-50 games. And if you have more injuries or whatnot, I mean, we've already talked about all the doom and gloom stuff last week, but it would not surprise me in the least if this is finally their 1999-esque season and this is an 8-win team that doesn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, if they're going to have a shot at all at making the playoffs, they're going to have to win every game that they're expected to win. They're going to have to beat Detroit, Chicago, Houston, Tennessee. You have to win all of those games and then somehow pull out, you know, a couple of potential upsets against some of these teams, like, you know, Minnesota and what have you, and Philadelphia, and Washington's not necessarily an upset, but
yeah.
You're going to have to beat a couple of good teams, but you have to not let one slip by against some of these lower-end teams.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to put it. So let's real quickly do some picks. I don't know, should we even pick, or should we just pick on the Facebook page since half the teams are either playing now or playing later? Maybe just pick the Packer game?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay, before we do that then, and then we'll wrap it up, we'll have a little bit of a shorter show today. I did want to mention the Badgers, because we didn't get a chance to talk to them. We never talk to the Badgers. We didn't get a chance to talk about them last week when they had a heartbreaking loss to Ohio State. Yesterday, as good as the Badgers have been, they hadn't won in almost a month because they had a bye week and then two losses to Michigan and Ohio State. So yesterday, they finally were able to win. They beat Iowa 17-9 in a game that was frustrating at times to watch, but if you looked at the stats after the fact, and I really settled down after I kind of watched some post-game, that they really, really dominated that game, and it really should have been more akin to the final score of that Michigan State game. But then Penn State goes out and beats Ohio State. So the Badgers end up winning, and yet they fell in the polls to 11. And I think that's in part because maybe the conference as a whole took a hit. Ohio State took a hit. And I guess I don't really have a specific question, but just your general thoughts to, A, how the Badgers are doing right now, and what you think is going to happen the rest of the way.
Yeah, I still really think this team is very, very good. I think this defense might be the best in the country. But I think, you know, it just as a theory, I think that you might be seeing some things that we've seen in the past against really good defenses, and even a team like Navy, like when a team plays against somebody like us, the next week they kind of have a fallback because they got so beat up, and, you know, mm-hmm. just in this physical contest, and then you kind of fall back down, and this definitely was a letdown game for Ohio State, a mm-hmm. game that you would have never 100 years expected them to lose. Yeah. So I it's frustrating because you think they're beating all these really good teams like Michigan State and LSU and Ohio State, and they didn't beat Ohio State but played them tough. But you and then they come back and don't look so good after that. I'm at least hoping that that's maybe part of the reason. I think that they're still very good, and I think some of these teams they beat are still good. It's just it's a little frustrating when they're beating top 10 teams every week and then those teams fall apart.
Yeah, definitely agree, and I think there's some possibility to that. I think Michigan had a week off before they beat Rutgers 78-0 after they beat the Badgers. So that's
yes, I think they did.
Okay, so that at least supports that theory. And I think there's some truth to it, and maybe Ohio State, that loss looks a little bit worse because they lost to a Penn State team that, you know, is fine, but nobody really has any high hopes for. But then Leonard Fournette goes out and looks every bit as good as he was predicted to be and just destroys Ole Miss, which there's a part of me that was just so relieved because Ole Miss was 3-3 and still in the top 25. I don't know why they just wanted them to be in the top 25 so bad, but I suppose now losing, they're 3-4, they lost by 100 points, and Leonard Fournette had like, at one point, he had 200 yards on 5 carries, so Ole Miss will probably be still 25th.
Yeah. Well, I guess we shouldn't complain too much because the Badgers were 4-2 and still in the top 10, so I'm sure a lot of people were thinking the same thing about us.
Yeah, this is true. My point was not very good then. But Yeah, so I'm curious to see what they'll do against Nebraska. I'm kind of chomping at the bit to get the chance to just completely dismantle what is a... speaking of teams ranked much higher than they should be, I mean, they've been doing that to everybody all year. I think the rankings more than ever are really week to week and almost just so... They're weird. The polls are. I've never seen it where you can go from 1 week unranked to top 10, and it seems like a bunch of teams have done that, and Nebraska seems amongst those. What did you think of Bart Houston playing a little bit? I liked it. I sensed you didn't.
No, I don't think he's very good, I guess. I don't know why you would take out your young, promising quarterback for a senior who is, maybe you just want to keep him sharp. In a game, you're expecting your defense to hold the other team to under 10 points, but I didn't understand that.
I guess the thing I liked about it is that he's not better than Hornibrook, but I think he's a little bit better intermediate at making decisions. He's got a quicker release than Hornibrook does, and you can just tell he's got some very good energy for that team. And provided you're not going to go in there and have him do a bunch of crazy stuff, I think if you're trying to give Hornibrook a break, or if you're trying to keep him sharp in the event you need him, I think that he seems like a guy that his teammates really like, and so maybe he can provide a spark of enthusiasm to the rest of the guys if they're kind of struggling a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, I like Hornibrook a lot, but your point's good. I was wondering if anybody else noticed that, because I've never heard anybody else say anything about it, but it seems like he's got the slowest delivery ever. It makes him look like he's kind of like a Kyle Bowler-ish thing, where it almost looks like there's no velocity on the ball, and it just looks like he's like pushing it. It just, and the passes are accurate, and there's some zip on it, but it's just such a strange long delivery.
Yeah, he really does have, I mean, Kerry Collins looks like Dan Marino compared to him with that big windup. And also, at times, I still think he's going to be a good player, but maybe my enthusiasm has dropped a little bit after the first couple of games. But, I mean, he is Drew Bledsoe-esque, like Cowboys Drew Bledsoe-esque in the pocket. He can't move at all, it seems like. But I think he's the right guy to go with. He's still a freshman, and he can hopefully grow into this role. And I think right now he almost seems a little bit... I don't know, his eyes in the rush a little bit too much, but that's going to happen in your fourth career start, I guess. Okay, so let's talk about the Green Bay Packers. And so Matt is not going to predict that Julio Jones breaks Flipper Anderson's record and gets over 336 receiving yards, but he's saying it's possible. So if it happens, I think Matt at least deserves partial credit for saying it 2 weeks ahead of time. But who's going to win?
Yeah, right. I'm going to go, I think sadly I'm going to go Atlanta here. I think this is one of those very few times where we're both going to pick against Green Bay. And it seems like in the past it's worked out for us, and the Packers have won a couple of those. I just, with how banged up they are, and on top of that just not playing all that great anyways, I'm not sure how you slow down a team like Atlanta and their offense enough to win. I just don't foresee a scenario really where they do it. Mm-hmm. With so many injuries in the secondary, I'm not sure how they can.
Yeah, I agree, and I would be surprised if it's close. I think they're going to lose by two touchdowns at least, and it seems like the kind of game that they... It might not be as bad as Denver or Arizona last year, but I could see them losing like a 45-24 kind of game where they just can't keep up.
Sure.
Very similar to how they lost to New Orleans back in 2014. I could definitely see that happening. And what's going to happen, too, is that's going to happen. And then I'm going to come on here next week, and I'm going to be like, I can't believe what's wrong with this team. And because I did the exact same thing in the Arizona game last year. But I think you always imagine it to go a certain way, and then somehow the Packers seem to be losing these games in a way that's even worse than we imagine. So hopefully that doesn't happen. Would you feel better about this season if they lost, like, 45-31?
As opposed to...
losing it... as opposed to losing it 24-10, just to see the offense come alive, even if we lose.
Yeah, I think that would make you feel a little bit better.
Okay, yeah, that's
at least see one part. I don't expect our defense to match up well, but at least if you can see one side of the ball do something.
Yeah, I guess that's more what I was getting at. If they lost the way they lost to Dallas, I would feel not that good. I'd feel about as how I feel about now, that yeah, there's a chance of an 8-8 type season and probably no better than 10 wins. But if they went out there and lit up the scoreboard even in a loss, then I'd start to feel that maybe the offense was turning the corner.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, so the other games we'll put on the Facebook page. I guess I can't see anything that looks too great. Oh, man. So next week's primetime games are Jags and Titans on Thursday Night Football. Then we have probably was going to be Cardinals-Panthers was probably going to be the big-time game on Fox, but who knows if they'll even show that one on a national basis. The Sunday night game is Eagles-Cowboys, which could be okay, and then Monday night is Vikings at Bears. So I don't foresee the ratings recovering this week.
Yeah, that Sunday nighter should be decent, but other than that, the rest of those games are pretty bad.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. There's just so many crummy teams like that are not, they're not good. They're not fun to watch. Like, what happened to your 2002 Bills types of teams that are not good, but they're exciting to watch? Like, I don't know. It just seems like I really want Tampa to be that type of team, and then they just get destroyed every time I watch them. So, I don't know. It's weird. I don't know how to fix it, but I can't think of very many teams that I really get excited to watch.
Yeah, there's not many. There's not that many like we're used to seeing, like kind of like you said, where the offenses are at least somewhat powerful. It's just a lot of teams with bad quarterbacks. I feel like a lot of Miamis and teams like that are like LA that you're just going to watch every week and you kind of know what you're going to get. The Jets, Baltimore, just every single team's basically the same. They're going to score like 18 points. They're going to turn the ball over four times and the game's going to be a mess.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't even feel like we've talked about that on the past, where my preferred style of football was similar to like the 2013 NFC Championship game, where you feel like the offenses and defenses are perfectly balanced, and when the defense makes a good play, it feels like they did it because they were good enough to force a good offense to make a mistake. Whereas now it just feels like there's a ton of teams with remarkably inefficient offenses that are not, they're making their own mistakes. The defense isn't forcing them into them.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, so hopefully, come on, all NFL, let's get better.
Yeah, fix it.
Bunch of bums. All right, so with that, hopefully you'll not lose so much enthusiasm over the NFL that you decide not to join us next week for our discussion about the Packers and the Falcons. If you'd want to let us know anything about this particular episode, your thoughts on the game, or any topics you'd like to talk about in the future, you can go to our Facebook page, Green and Gold Forever. Podcast on Facebook. You can tweet at us at Green Gold Forever. That's the number 4. And don't forget to download the Podbean app and then follow the Green and Gold Forever podcast, where you can listen to our newest episodes. They'll show up as soon as we upload them. And then also, you will get to hear our complete archives, so you can follow us there. And then also, if you prefer the iTunes podcasting app, you can follow us on iTunes as well. There, you only get about the last 10 episodes, but once again, you'll get an alert as soon as the podcast is posted, so that has its own benefit as well. So we're doing Sunday show because Matt's getting old tomorrow. And
That's right.
So are you excited to be almost old?
Not really. This is like the most depressing birthday ever. I'm like 29, so I'm a year before 30. So it's like you're not even at the mark yet, but you're so close that it's kind of depressing. And then it's on like a Monday.
Oh, yeah, like, Monday birthday.
It's just kind of a bummer, but whatever.
Adult birthdays are the worst.
Yeah, it's kind of lame. You stop getting excited at like 23, 24, I think.
Yeah, and yeah, it's not even a milestone. I felt like, so I'm a little bit older than Matt, so I turned 29 earlier this year, and for me, it felt so old, like, but it's not 30. And so, like, if you complain about being old at work, everybody gets mad at you. They're like, oh, you're not old at all. And it's just really weird. It's a weird age to be. Nobody thinks you're old enough to take your opinion seriously, but you're not young enough to do anything stupid.
It's like the puberty of adults, kind of.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to put it. All right, well, enjoy your puberty tomorrow, and
I will.
All right, and everybody have a great week. Take care, everyone.